This podcast is a part of Dear Asian Youth, a youth-led magazine aimed towards Asian activism for Asian youth by Asian youth. Follow us on all platforms, Instagram, Twitter, etc. at Dear Asian Youth and at Dear Asian Girl to get updates on all the latest articles, poetry and prose, podcasts, campaigns, and more. Dear Asian Girl, a podcast dedicated to uplift and share Asian girl stories everywhere. Today we'll be talking about Asian fetishization, yellow fever, and more with Joyce. Hello everyone, I'm here with Alina today, and we're going to be talking about such a heavy topic, not heavy, but just like really, really crazy topic that I think every Asian woman has dealt with sometime in her life or sometime in her career or anything, and it's Asian fetishization. Oh my goodness, even in high school, there's always been white boys that have, like, I'm not saying they fetishize me. Luckily I have that privilege where, like, it isn't too bad, but I've definitely had those experiences where I've come in and, like, I don't want to, like, call out names. I pray to God he isn't listening, because I'd be so, oh my God, I'd be like, R.I.P., you know? But basically, literally freshman year, I had this guy in like three of my classes, and he's the type of guy that's like obsessed with like World War One, World War Two. Like the specific niche kid, that typical stereotype kid. Yeah, I know. And so, I had him in like three of my classes. He was in my English class, he was in my math class, and then he was like in my, he was in my science class. And I sat next to him one like a few times, and he would just like follow me around saying like he had a thing for Asians, like
why would you say that, like, that's not,
oh my gosh. And literally, like, okay, wait, this is another time. It was like sophomore year, I like walked out, and like the thing is about my health class, we have like two different sides. And so, like, I walk out the door, and he, like, literally, I turn to the right, and he's, like, right in front of me, asking me how I am, asking me, like, what type of Filipino food do I eat? Like, it was so crazy. And, like, I would, like, walk out, and I would, like, go up the stairs, and he would still talk to me, asking me, like, how I'm doing. And it's not just me, though. Like, literally, all the Asian girls that that are in my school and community, they literally had this dude, like, follow them around, and he's like in Mun and something, he's in Mun, and he just like followed my friend like for like a good 30 minutes, and like he stares at you really creepily, like, it's, oh my gosh, no. And
that scares the fuck out
and
of me.
And he really, oh my gosh. And there's like also an Asian club at my school, and he like goes to the club.
But did you say, did he join it?
Yeah, he joined the club.
And he's not Asian.
He's not Asian.
He's white, right?
Yeah, he's white. Then another thing is, there's like a ramen shop in our little town area, and he asked for a job. So he's like obsessed with, like, I mean, it's good. I don't even know if it's like him appreciating it or him fetishizing it, but like, that's my personal experience.
I'm in shock.
Oh my gosh. And then there was another time, it was me and all my friends, and we were like, okay, so we like, I work at this, my local radio station, and we like went to sleep like there, we basically hung out like overnight at school, like raising money for the radio station. She was talking about Japan and how she was obsessed with it, and like she loved the culture, but like, and she was sort of like, oh my goodness, I have a thing for Asian women, like, they're so exotic. And like, it was so awkward, because I was just sitting there, and she was like, oh, are you Asian? I was like,
what do you think?
And so then I ended up, like, hiding away for, like, the rest of the day. It was so bad.
I've never had, so, the school that I go to, I live in, for context, Idaho, and part-time in Utah, but I grew up in Idaho, so obviously it's a very ethnically homogenous community. So I was like one of the only Asian people in my school, or a brown person even in my school, like it was just all white people. And so I didn't have like any other Asian people part of my school who would go through like the same things with me in regards to like people hypersexualizing Asian women. But for my experience, I haven't had anything super like kind of out there and like someone really like clearly like fetishizing me. But I've had like on a smaller scale like comments and shit that's like kind of put mm-hmm. me off like in a weird way. Yeah. And it's like kind of bad that we both like kind of overlook this and be like, oh, like, well, it could be worse, you know, like we could just die because of a hate crime yeah. because of this like fetishization. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so it started like the first time was, this was 2 years ago. I'm not gonna say this guy's name, even though I really want to say his name.
I know.
He's still like, he's like a family friend. And he's like, he's a white guy, right? Obviously. And like we were like kind of flirting a little bit. Like he seemed normal to me, right? Yeah. He seemed normal. But then he would say shit like, oh, my beautiful Asian woman, or like my beautiful Pakistani woman.
I'm no, like, he actually like, said that.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Like, maybe it's just me, but like
red flag, like, red flag.
Yeah, yeah. Right? And I thought, like, at first I didn't think of anything of it, because, like, I mean, being Pakistani is part of my, like, identity, but it's not, like, my entire, like, being. Like, there's so much more to me than just, like, my, like my race.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just weird, because just the fact that he would, like, he would always just bring it up, my, like, race. And, like, we weren't dating or anything. Like, we were just, like, flirting or whatever. And, like, I don't know, maybe it's, like, maybe it's not that big of a deal, like maybe it's just he was making a comment, but like mm-hmm. that's like definitely a smaller scale of like fetishizing Asian women, because like it's just, I feel like it's a way of like, I guess, covering up your racism and making it a form of sexualizing someone to like pass, you know what I mean? I don't know mm-hmm. if that makes sense, but like it was, that was just my first experience with it. And then my second experience, the first guy that I dated, oh my god, people are gonna know who this is I'm talking about.
Ooh, spill.
Yeah, he was a good friend. He's a good friend, and like I still appreciate him. And see, like I need to not like be friends with these people. What the fuck? But anyway, I don't think it's a fetish or anything. But I've noticed a pattern on like the people who this guy has dated, and little to say, like they are Asian. The majority of them are Asian.
Yes.
And I don't know his entire like history of who he's dated, but like. The other man, people are literally gonna know who this guy is. But it's fine. Like, I don't think it's a fetish. I don't know. Maybe it is. But anyway, so I wasn't gonna bring this up until you mentioned the guy who was like obsessed with you was obsessed with like World War One, and the guy who I dated was also obsessed with like World War One.
No.
I think that yeah.
There's definitely why, like, a sign.
That's definitely like some sort of weird sign, and like. Jen and I, obviously, we did our research, like, last minute, so we, like, yeah. looked into kind of, like, fetishizing Asian women, and we noticed that there's this fetish for Asian women, and specifically, I think, mainly, like, East and Southeast Asian women comes yeah. from, like, the Silk Road, which mm-hmm. apparently is, like, basically, wait, let me open it up, because I have it over here.
Oh, I can, go ahead.
Yeah, it comes from the Silk Road, and the Silk Road was... like a network of trade routes which connected East and West Asia for like obviously silk and other forms of material, and that was back in to like from the 2nd century BCE to the 18th century.
That's crazy.
So that's like way deep in like our world's history. So considering the guys who have like been weird to us and like fetishized us, it's comes from their link and their obsession of like World War One, and their obsession with like, because the guy who I was like dating was like really obsessed with like history and shit, like mm-hmm. specifically this type of stuff. So I think that's like a red flag.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know. It was just like that was my experience with it. It was kind of weird. It wasn't, as I mentioned, super like out there, but yeah. it's still like a form of it, I think. But yeah.
Speaking of like World War One, World War Two, Dear Asian Youth actually posted like a little thing I think yesterday, and they were talking about like the history of where it really came from in terms of yellow fever and Asian fetishization. And like I remember it was created like in World War Two, and they created bases within Asia, and there's like a source of like sex industries. So like many of Asian women, specifically Filipinos and Hawaiians, because it was during the World War II, were enslaved as prostitutes for the US Army. Wow. And I remember reading that it was like 55,000 Filipino children were created from this freaking sex industry. So you can clearly see how the Asian fetishization is constantly turned into objectifying women and not really showing them, like, representing who their culture is specifically. It's more, they're seen as, like, docile and really submissive to the point where they can do these types of things. And, like, personally, like, I've never had those experiences, but I've definitely seen, specifically predominantly in the East Asian community, in which there's fetishization, where their culture, specifically, like, their like, symbols, such as, like, their dragon tattoos or their lotus, like, the lotus flower, like, these have been turned into freaking sexual objects and, like, seen as, like, it sort of, like, appropriates it in the sort of way. I wouldn't say something like that. And I think the ABG culture is sort of a result of the yellow fever, because now, like, there's this stereotype of the ABG, which girls in the East Asian community don't really want to go into, and that's sort of, like, being the stereotype of going to clubbing, where, like, wearing, like, a shit ton of, like, makeup and tattoos, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that at all. It's just, like, I think, like, the men who are appealed to those types of things sort of fetishize them as a result, and I think that's what's been created out of it as sort of, like, a way to, like, I don't know. Yeah.
No, I think what you said is so interesting, because when we were looking at, like, the articles before this, like, recording, we noticed that there's this, the thing that, like, hypersexualizing Asian women does is not only does it, like, create violence towards, like, Asian women and, like, further perpetuates, like, rape culture, mm-hmm. but it also further, like, feeds to the idea that Asian women need to, like go against the norm of being Asian to be, like, cool or considered cool, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this one girl, I didn't think I was gonna bring this up, I always say that, but so her name is, like, Tila Tequila or something, and apparently she was, like, on a TV show, but what she did was she did, like, the Nazi, like, salute hail thing or whatever, right?
At
some white supremacist sort of thing. And I'm pretty sure she also dated a white supremacist and has a kid with him, but with, like, ABG culture, it kind of, like, makes, so that's, like, Asian baby girl or gangster or something,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So that basically goes against, like, the norm of what Asian women are considered to be like. And there's nothing wrong with that. I really don't, like, go against that. But the thing with, like, the girl Tila Tequila, she is, like, going against loving herself and being who she is to further feed to the white supremacist eyes and the white supremacist gaze, if that makes sense. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I really didn't know that there was, like, these fucking, like, sex camps and shit during, like, World War One. You mm-hmm. said a World War Three, yeah.
World War Two, yeah.
That's, like, crazy. And I think that's interesting that you bring it up, because as we mentioned, like, with our experiences, the people who, like, fetishized us were weirdly obsessed with, like, World War, like, Two and shit. Like, that's, like, weird to me. Like, is that not weird?
I don't know. Like, I don't know why it's that, but, like, I feel like it could be. If they know their history, if they know World War II that well, then I feel like there has to be a connection between that. There's no way that they're just, like, oh, we just, like, fetishize women, but we also, like, read into World War II.
Yeah, I feel like definitely the guy who fetishized you was, like, definitely, like, that has to be, like, mine is kind of, like, an open-ended thing, because I don't know if he was, like, it maybe was a coincidence. See, then there's, like, that situation where it's, like, oh, maybe it's a coincidence that he, like, just only dated, like, Asian women.
No.
But I don't know.
No. I don't know. It's definitely fetishization. They're, like, there's no freaking way, because literally I had, like, an ex that, like, fetishized women, Asian women, and I didn't even realize it until maybe, like, a week after we broke up or something. I was like,
God,
oh my gosh, all the people, like, two of the people you've dated are literally Asian. You basically see us as exotic. You basically see us as, like, a sex object. I don't know. And I just, I kind of regret that. Like, I hate myself so much. Like, I literally was like, oh my God, this is it. This is, why do I date white men? I'm never going to date white men again. So that's when I stopped. that's when I gave up on the white men in general. I was like, no. Exactly.
But yeah, no, same. I like, no more dating white men for me. I think that did not work out well for me. I think, like, even, like, the fact that we felt bad about it, like, I'm, like, thinking about it, like, I'm having a crisis right now. I'm, like, regretting, like, dating this person, because I was, like, oh, the fact that he dated like more than one eight like one more than like two Asian women is like really concerning to me. But like, it's not our fault. Like, we can't be taking like that, like their I guess their hypersexualization of Asian women as like our like job, I guess, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, honestly, like, I'm with you, girl, like, regret that.
And in terms of like the culture and stuff, I feel like if you do fetishize an Asian woman, you're basically sort of depersonalizing their experiences and their culture, and now they're seen as sort of targets for your sexual benefit. And I think that's something that like as you've mentioned, like, that perpetrates rape culture. And like, I don't think a lot of, and also because they're seen as like docile, submissive, and meek, like, you, it's harder for an Asian woman to really speak up about her experiences because we're going to be shut down because of the model minority myth. There we go again. Everything sort of relates to one another. I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's wild. Yeah, I was going to say we should talk more about the violence that Asian women face because of the fetishization that they, I guess, face from, general public, I guess, at this point. So in one of the articles, I think it was the New York Times article that we were reading, and we'll put like the links to them somewhere, I'm sure we will, like,
yeah,
like they have like the details thing. Yeah. But anyway, so reading through that, they said the fetishization of Asian women exists at the intersection of two popular racial myths. The first being the model minority myth. We already talked about that earlier, but basically, to kind of like clarify what that is, the model minority myth feeds to the fetishization of Asian women because it paints Asians as the model minority, which makes them seem more appealing to the average like citizen, and that then opens like the door of acceptance from white supremacists. And the white supremacists, obviously, they don't got a good track record, they literally racist. So
yeah,
then fetishizing Asian women feeds to the violence and rape that they face. And we saw this in what you brought up about the World War II camps that they had, and how they would be raped. I'm sure none of them willingly wanted to have sex with these white supremacists or like the people who would come into these camps. So I feel like that, paired with the model minority myth, the article also brought up the hypersexualization of Asian women and how they're hypersexualized in media and other forms of media in general.
Yeah.
So with these two things, you further feed to hypersexualizing Asian women, and with that you feed to the violence that they face. And sorry, I'm going on like a tangent here, but I thought I'd bring up the fact that a lot of white supremacists have actually dated like East Asian women. So an alt-right and white supremacist love for like fetishizing Asian women can lead to their violence and hate crimes against them. And one example is this guy named Richard Spencer. He is a known white supremacist, and he has a long, long history of dating Asian women, specifically East Asian women. And in fact, in the article, it also mentions that someone said, like, a commenter on an alt-right forum said, exclusively dating Asian women is practically a white nationalist rite of passage.
Yeah.
And that is, like, really, like, crazy to think about. So I don't know, like, crazy. What are your thoughts on this?
Wow, that's shocking. Wait, he said that? White nationalist rite of passage. The fact that, like, he has such a high privilege in which he has the right to say that to especially an Asian woman that you're dating.
Yeah.
That's
just... It wasn't specifically the Richard Spencer guy, but I'm sure he said shit like that. The quote or whatever was from, like, a commenter on a white supremacist forum. So it was, I'm pretty sure it was someone who's, like, a white supremacist, probably. But yeah, like, go on.
That's so detrimental to mental health of, like, Asian women or, like, Asian youth in general. Like, I can't even imagine dating a dude that, like, would literally say, like, oh, I have a rite of passage to date you. Like, I have this sort of privilege to date you. Like, you're lucky that you're the model minority myth. Like, you're lucky you're this and that and that. And I'm like, no. I'm just... I don't know. That's horrible. Yeah. And you mentioned something about how it's seen in like Hollywood media. You can definitely see that, especially we literally, oh my God, everything's going back. But we were talking...
Yeah, I saw all of our episodes. Everything's linked.
Even with the Asian representation, Dear Asian Youth, again, like, with their posts, they basically talked about the 1930s and Hollywood films in which, like, Asian... Of course, there was, like, Asian representation starting up in the media, but there was a way that, like, their fetishization turned them into being docile and really submissive, but with, like, a really, I guess, like, as Dear Asian Youth said, eccentric sexuality. And you could see that prevalent in, like, Anna May Wong's movies, where she's seen as, like, this sort of sex object to white men in the movies, and not seen as, like, a main character, not seen as, like, something that's, like, prevalent to an, like, Asian culture. And I think that's something, like, that's really hard for Asian girls to face, because they now have to deal with, like, white men and dealing with, like, them seen as, like, objects. And I think that's something, like, that's just harmful to their mental health. Yeah,
no, I agree. And I think, like, it's kind of like, this goes back to, like, I don't know if it was our third episode where we talked about women of color representation in the media, but I feel like this is why it's so important to have more, like, women of color in general in films behind and in front of the camera, because we can be able to, like, further portray an image that we want to portray, rather than having the oppressors, the ones who are running every single industry.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as you mentioned, like, if we were to properly represent minority communities and groups, we will not have these, I mean, I can't say this with 100% or 1,000%, but, like, we will, I mean, I think, like, the fetishization of Asian women in general would be a lot more smaller if we had that, if we had more people from our minority group on media. I mean, it's crazy that all of our episodes are literally linked this way, and how, like, properly portraying Asian women in the media and not hypersexualizing them, like, and how hypersexualizing them actually feeds to the fetishization of Asian women, and also how this further feeds to the violence that they face. And then the model minority myth, as always, like, it portrays, as you mentioned, Asian women as, like, more I guess meek and quiet and, like, wants to not speak out, and that kind of helps, like, I feel like that further feeds this image of other people, like, specifically white men, like, hiding their racism in sexualization.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of an interesting, like, thing to think about, because they're using this, like, model minority myth that Asian women are, like, more sub to dominate them, if that makes sense. I don't know if that...
Yeah, no, I think having a way to, like, sort of change the narrative on how Asian women are portrayed in the media will be beneficial for Asian youth, in which they mm-hmm. can feel empowered and, like, safe around, like, men, like, or, like, anything in general, like,
no,
just walking out on the streets, or, like,
yeah, like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just unbelievable that, like, Asian women specifically, and, like, honestly, like, every woman of color has to do with fetishization, black women especially, honestly, like, mm-hmm. but that's, like, a whole other topic, but focusing on Asian women specifically, it's crazy that we have to deal with, like, a whole nother, like, form of violence faced towards us that is linked to, like, hypersexualization of us.
Yeah.
And it, I don't know, it's just, like, unbelievable to me to think about that.
So basically, in general, white men need to be destroyed, terminated.
Period.
I saw that on a
Period.
TikTok. Oh my gosh, it was like this dude, and he was talking about, like, the girls and the gays and how to, like, exterminate them. And I was like, yes,
what
yes, as we should. Oh my gosh.
Oh my god, I, like, cannot. Like, white men, like,
I don't know. It's just specifically white men. It's everyone against the white man. And
yeah. Period.
Mm-hmm. Because in the end, there's sort of, like, the main causes of white supremacy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Basically, we talked about what our past 5 episodes sort of related to, specifically Asian mm-hmm. women and dealing with fetishization, and how that relates to the model minority myth of us being successful and hardworking, so we can't speak up on whenever we do get fetishized. We also talked about what else? Oh, Asian representation in the media, but how it's seen as another way of fetishizing Asian women.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about, like, the white supremacy that goes along with that. We talked about our mm-hmm. own experiences and how it interlinks with men just having a thing for World War II.
Yeah, that's if you're a white man and your name is like fucking Brad or something, and you like World War II, be careful, like to not fetishize women, specifically Asian women. Yeah, no, we talked about a lot of stuff. And also, period, fuck the model minority myth.
Fuck the model minority myth.
It's feeding to all of this stuff, but yeah.
I think a way for, I can't say for me because I'm not specifically like an East Asian woman. I'm not, I've never had that many form of fetishization, but I think there's a way in which, in terms of like having that relationship with a biracial, I think just appreciating the culture and not appropriating it, not fetishizing it, and just appreciating that human for who they are, regardless of like their race and their ethnicity and their culture. Like, I think that's something that will be okay in terms of like a biracial relationship. I don't see any harm in that. We're not saying at all like you shouldn't be dating us. I think it's just the idea of making us seem as like an object or a sexual desire is when everything like switches. And I think that's something that needs to change.
No, I think that's a great point. And kind of like adding on to that, when if you are in like a biracial, like I guess relationship, kind of like what Jen mentioned, see this like person that you're dating as a person and appreciate their culture and like understand their traditions and things like that. You don't need to make their entire identity about their race because that's racist, period. But yeah, no, I think this is a great episode, but I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. Okay, we're good.
Guys, today we have a really special guest. Her name is Joyce. She's written this amazing book about Asian fetishization, and yeah, she has a lot to say about it.
Hi, thanks for having me here. My name is Joyce Keeboom Park, and I'm an upcoming author publishing my first book this December on the subject matter of yellow fever. So we go over both fetishization of Asian individuals and how sexual racism is a prevalent thing in our community.
Yeah. Do you have any personal experiences yourself in terms of the yellow fever and Asian fetishization? Because I mentioned before earlier, I've had really, like, not that bad, more like sort of I was seen as something like exotic, but I've never like had that perpetration of like racism underneath like the blanket of like your fetishization. So what are your personal experiences on it?
So I think I first started experiencing them maybe when I was 13, middle school. And they got, before I turned into an adult, I heard comments, I heard catcalls on the streets, and they always pertained to being Asian. And I was like, okay, that's weird, but I'm gonna move on. But the minute I hit college, it became super explicit. For example, I was at a college party once, and this one guy came up to me, this tall white guy, and was like, hey, what kind are you? And I actually include this in my book, but he was like, what kind are you? And I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Please tell me you're asking me what drink I'm drinking right now. But he was like, no, what kind are you? And I was like, oh, I'm Korean American, if that's what you're asking. He was like, yeah, dude, Koreans, they're the best kind. And he just sat there for the next, I don't know how many minutes, and just talked to me about how he spoke Chinese and how he's been to Hong Kong and how he thinks Koreans are great. And that was the moment I was like, oh God, I hate it here. This is not okay. And so
Oh my
it
God.
got to the point where friends were like, Joyce, we need to get out of here. And I was like, I agree, because he was whispering to his other friends that he was going to take me home. And I was like, that's not happening.
No.
And I ended up running out of the party with him chasing behind me.
He was
And it
chasing
was
after
actually
you?
so
Like
terrifying.
he was actually running?
Yeah.
Or oh my
Yeah.
gosh. Holy crap. Holy shit. Like, no.
Wait, yep. And that was the first to many experiences. Yep.
Oh my gosh.
That must have been so scary. Like, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's just for me, but a lot of Asian women, and female presenting non-binary individuals also experience something like this.
Yeah.
But we sort of internalize it and we pretend like it's nothing. We rationalize it into a joke or some form of humor. And so I took this trauma as a form of, you know, funny event that happened my freshman year of college, and I ignored it, even though it scarred me and it left remnants of, you know, girl aggression. But yeah, it was a traumatic experience that I experienced.
Yes, is that what, like,
the second week of college, I think.
Is that what inspired you to start writing the book? Like, how did that process sort of begin?
My book process is slightly different. Someone through LinkedIn reached out to me, and it was this professor from Georgetown. He was like, hey, do you want to write a book? And I was like, sir, you're obviously a scammer. I'm not going to respond to this.
Yeah.
He was like, no, like, I want to schedule a phone call with you. I just started a firm, and we're trying to get young authors and their stories published. And I was like, I am a writer, but you are still so sus. Basically, he had started this entrepreneur company at Georgetown that had published hundreds of books and was expanding it to other universities. And so we ended up talking, and at first I wanted to write about something related to human rights because that's what I'm interested in. And then I realized I can't talk about other people's human rights without really analyzing and introspecting my own relationship with being violated as a human being and as a woman. And that represented, you know, digging deep into my own processing of what yellow fever means to me and how I've ignored it for the past few years.
Yeah. And I know you, like, split your book into, like, three sections and, like, different parts, like, different categories. Do you want to also explain what that was like? What you included and talked about?
So my book is split up into three parts. I go into an overview of the history of how fetishization and emasculation came to be. And then I go into the modern implications. So that includes things like pornography, Hollywood influences, sex tourism, mail order brides, alt-right communities, incels, and all that fun stuff. And then I go into, you know, what we can do from here and certain changes that are occurring in our community that can and cannot be enlightening in ways. So yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really cool how you separated the chapters into something like, okay, here's our history so that we can finally learn about, like, where this sort of stems from, and then we can sort of relate that to, like, the more present thing where, like, we're now dealing with, like, Asian women being fetishized, and it turns into almost like sex trafficking, oh my god, I can't speak, and human trafficking, and then it turns into the modern day, like, what can we do in order for it to be better, and what is your opinion on, in terms of, like, biracial dating and how there's a difference between appropriating or fetishizing that person versus just actually appreciating their culture? Because I've always had, like, confusion on that for sure.
Right. So I think things like biracial dating are very difficult topics because, historically speaking, a lot of these relationships have been rooted in stereotypes, in, you know, fetishes, and this exotification of the individual, which has been reflected in, you know, how Asian men and white women relationships are much more rare than Asian women and white men relationships. And I think, I mentioned this multiple times throughout my book, but in terms of sexual racism, it's really important to really introspect whether or not you as an individual are interested in dating or attracted to a person because of who they are as a human being, before your fantasy of what they are and what you want them to be. So, for example, if your idea of an individual perpetuates some form of harmful narrative, that, you know, is extremely harmful to a race, a group, then most likely that relationship is not okay. It's something that's really, you know, hurtful. It's something that can potentially bring much more damage than actual positive benefits and love to it. But if it is a biracial relationship where you know that you, where you are aware that these things are, exist, and you are certain for a fact that your attraction to them is not based on these pervasive narratives, then I think it's okay.
Yeah, I think just it's a huge issue with fetishization that you just erase a person's entire individuality just based on like some stereotypes you know of their community that didn't even come from them. It was rooted with like the history in it, right? Like American soldiers coming and like having their bases in like Vietnam or like South Korea, and like, you know, all these women had to go into prostitution. Like now because of that they're seen as like geisha girls or whatever, like that.
Right.
You could definitely see that prevalent in Asian representation in the media, where we are sort of, most Asians are basically sexualized as prostitutes or an object for the white man, which fuels into white supremacy. You could see that in like especially like the 1930s films in Hollywood, where Asian women were basically sexualized for a man's desires, in which they had like a specific, like the way they dressed or their fashion or their culture, and that sort of I guess appropriates even their own culture, because now they're like their ethnic clothing is seen as like a sexual desire, or their symbols that they do have, like such as like the dragon tattoo, like they see that as like a sexual object now. And I think that's something that's like really harmful to an Asian woman, that is, especially in America, where we are dealt with already racism in general for us. But it's just like hard for many Asian women to deal with.
And I think that also ties into the idea of, you know, Asians being the honorary whites once again, because media at that time, you know, through the Madame Butterfly archetype, they always portrayed Asian women as sexual objects, but at the end of the day it was the white woman who would be next to the white man, and the Asian woman would be the object, you know, who through very violent ways would be portrayed as the individual either committing suicide, dying, or being left behind for the white man to leave with the white woman. And I think that signified the role that Asian women are objects in relation to, you know, this concept of white supremacy.
It's like that, I don't know if you guys remember this, but season 2 Friends, like Ross and Rachel, right? And like, then there's this character.
Right.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And Rachel's so rude to her. When she like initially meets her, she's like screaming at her, "Welcome to our country." And like, there's so much like inferiority in that power dynamic. And I can see how that relates to that trope you're mentioning.
That, I completely forgot about that season and like the whole Rachel and Ross thing. And I never really realized, I never realized that Rachel was like that. And I think that what sucks is because it's like so normalized for like white people to say those types of stuff to Asians, and that how they sort of submiss and sort of like go back into that. Another form of, I guess, the white savior complex that you were mentioning earlier, Joyce. I think Diversify Your Narrative also talked about this, but Miss Saigon, perfect example of that white savior complex, in which she was, Lea Salonga, the main character, was basically like left alone, and the GI basically left the woman in order to portray, to be with this white woman in the end, and left her extremely heartbroken and extremely like seen as just like an object for her to have a kid. Like, she literally had a kid in the movie and she like killed herself because of it. And that shows like how especially like in World War II, where they had like those bases where the women were seen as like these sort of prostitutes, and now like white men are supposed to save Asian women in that sort of sense. And I think that's something that's like still horribly normalized in today's society, where especially like those experiences that you had and my experiences and Anna's experiences, like they all sort of correlate to the history behind it. And I think that's really important that you're addressing it in your book, especially with you like split it up to like 3 chapters, I think.
Three sections. Yeah, and what's terrifying is that, you know, what you just mentioned, Miss Saigon, is it's the exact storyline has been rewritten and reused for hundreds of years. Like, that exact storyline of the white woman, or the Asian woman being used as an object and being thrown away. And for me, I didn't realize that this storyline was something that reached all the way to, I believe, the 1780s. And this Miss Saigon has been, you know, a super popular Broadway musical. And not a lot of people pointed it out that this was a very racist, you know, very objectifying storyline that's extremely offensive to women. Instead, everyone was just really you know, obsessed with the idea that we finally had representation in Hollywood or in Broadway. But what does it mean to have representation if it perpetuates a pervasive narrative once again? Like, is that something that we need to give up in order to be seen on television? And is that a sacrifice that is fair in any way? And personally, I don't think it is.
Yeah, the same way, like, we want to be represented, it also matters how, because, like, people want to, like, conform, like, to those meek, quiet standards of being, like, an Asian woman, right? Just so they can be in that sort of in crowd or be accepted, but that's not acceptance. It's just conforming to, like I said, white supremacy and just wanting to do, just doing what they want us to do and, like, making it easy and not uncomfortable for them. So, yeah, there's definitely more layers to how we should be represented and just things like that, yeah.
I like the fact that you mentioned how, in terms of, like, Asian representation, like, it was, for sure, Miss Saigon was a good stepping stone in terms of having more Asians, like, in Broadway. But I think that's what's also really notably that we should consider is that musical was created by European men. It was created by, I think, Claude Michael, I can't even pronounce it, and the people that created Les Mis or something like, yeah, they created Les Mis, I remember. And I think that's, like, what's something in terms of Asian representation and in terms of fetishization is what's also prevalent in Mulan as well. There's a lot of TikToks going around about how Mulan isn't an accurate representation and how, like, it's a good stepping stone, but only because the cast is predominantly Asian, but not really. But in the end, like, the director, the screenwriters, everything, the whole production is mostly white.
Right.
And that sort of twists that racist narrative in which Asians are yet again fetishized and yet again seen as this sort of model minority myth. And yeah, for sure.
And I think what's super scary is, you know, in the process of writing this book, I've had many conversations with people regarding the subject matter of sexual racism. And the most common response I've gotten in opposition has been from white men who have contacted me asking me whether or not their attraction to Asian women is racist.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also had, you know, multiple phone calls with individuals that, you know, directly called me and tried to argue that their fetish for Asian women wasn't harmful in any way. And I think what's scary is that in all these conversations, they completely disregard the emotions and the pain and the trauma of the Asian woman and instead prioritize their own stance in arguing that their fetish isn't harmful. And I think that just shows the position white men have in society and the privilege that they are given to completely disregard and consider what the Asian woman wants as a secondary thing compared to their own desires. And what's scary is, you know, during these conversations, I've tried to tell them that their fetish is extremely problematic, not because, well, exactly because it's just problematic in so many ways, but also because they have this idea that Asian American represents this monolithic East Asian or Southeast Asian identity and their own stereotypes and fantasies that come with it. But in reality, it encompasses more than, what, 40 identity groups, ethnic groups. And I think because of this pervasive monolithic narrative that they are so adamant on in perpetuating their fantasy, it's extremely hard to just try to make them realize their own privilege and not only being white, but also being a man and in stating what kind of stance and power they usually have over us in society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
I definitely, in terms of what you said about how, like, they never really, they never really empathized with how an Asian woman dealt with these traumas and dealt with these fetishizations. I think that's really important that you did mention that, because I think, like, especially white men, like, they have so much of this privilege, they have so much of this power hold against, like, literally everyone, and that's what they don't realize. And I think it's something, like, they need to check their privilege in order for them to realize, like, this is a problem, this is something that, like, Asian women face a lot, especially, like, going out regularly. Like, you literally went to a party and you've dealt with it, and it's still sort of traumatic to this day. And I think that's important that you brought it up, and I'm really happy that you're writing this book that really addresses these situations. And really, like, I don't think a lot of people don't realize it, that, like, a lot of Asian women do deal with this. And either that, or it's just so normalized that it's, like, pushed under the rug and, like, no one really cares about it because it's happened so on the regular and so on the daily. And I think switching that narrative will really help, hopefully. But at the end of the day, like, it's something that, like, each individual, especially a white man, needs to check on in terms if they do want to go into this endeavor of dating an Asian woman. And I think just checking their privilege and checking and realizing, like, are we dating this person for who they really are as their personality, their character, or are we dating them because we like to fantasize this Asian woman? And I think that's something, like, I guess that's why I don't date white men. Because no, but lastly, what is your advice for, like, the Asian girls out there that are listening right now and how to deal with, like, yellow fever and Asian fetishization? And what do you recommend us to do when we are confronted with this situation firsthand?
Right. So I think the first thing that everyone should do, and this doesn't only include, you know, Asian girls, but also,
continue.
But also, you know, anyone in the Asian American queer community as well, I think it's to really first let yourself feel what being fetishized or emasculated means, and really validate your own pain in regards to that. And, you know, stop internalizing it, stop pretending like it's nothing, stop pretending like it's a joke, because it's okay to hurt. And then to really be adamant on your stance. When you're talking to someone with yellow fever, it's okay to tell them that you're not okay with them fetishizing you, you're not okay with them emasculating you. To really be clear that their priority in perpetuating their fantasy of you isn't as important as your own feelings, as your own, you know, emotions, as your own identity. And to really become more firm in saying no to these tropes constantly perpetuated by society. Like, it's extremely difficult to be like, okay, I know this sucks, but it's okay to suck, even though the world is telling me that it's not okay to suck. Like, it's really going to be difficult for you to truly accept who you are and to truly accept both the negative ways and the positive ways that society perceives you. But in order to really promote any form of change, and for the sake of your mental health and sanity, it's important to become more comfortable with your skin in any form or matter.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, there isn't a clear-cut answer on what people should do, because I think it's truly different for every individual. But I really believe validation and introspection of your own identity and being comfortable is what everyone should do in order to, you know, fight against this, at least in a personal level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was really good. I think that's about it. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're so excited to read it. It's coming out in December, you said?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so the link will be in our description about your book and what it's about, and we'll make sure to promote it as much as we can, and we're so excited that you're actually, like, really promoting this topic and
something. I know. What you're doing is, like, amazing. Like, go off, sis. thank you.
I think it's a thing that, like, a lot of Asian girls need to hear, especially young Asian girls that are gonna be dealing with growing up and going to high school and college and finally finding a way to overcome that without having that trauma, because we don't want that anymore. We want things to change. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having us. This was really great.
Want more of Dear Asian Girl? You can find us everywhere on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor. We're on everything. Can't get enough? Subscribe, follow, rate, review to get all the updates and the latest on DAG. Let us know your feedback and what we can do to improve.
Want to be a part of the podcast or Dear Asian Youth? Go on DearAsianYouth.org and click Contact to be a part of the DAG and Day team. We'd love to have more hosts. We have our own Instagram. Follow us at Dear Asian Girl to receive updates on all the latest episodes and fun fact about the hosts. We'd love for you to reach out. DAG, Dear Asian Girl, a podcast dedicated to uplift and share Asian girl stories everywhere. For the Asian girl, by the Asian girl. Logo by Kristen Huynh. Produced and edited by Genesis, and produced on Anchor.